Lights. Camera. Action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, g'day, mate. There you go.
Welcome to Lethal Mullet, here where we look at, of course, all the greatness of action films from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. And we've even ventured into the 70s, folks. Much, much more. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, here live on, of course, Fandom Podcast Network. That's right. Place where you can find a lot of other genres and different styles of things that we chat about in podcast format. Joining me today from there, of course, is the co-creator and one of my dear pals, editor extraordinaire, also the one, the only, Carl Wagner. Buddy, how are you?
I'm not good. I'm all out of Ubertonia.
Obviously, today we're going to be looking at the Avatar franchise and, of course, in particular, number two, The Way of the Water.
Yes,
that's right, The Way of the Water.
I have many thoughts on Avatar in general and Way of the Water because I'm a firm believer that I think people have become way too hard on the Avatar franchise.
Agreed. You know, and look, some with good reason and some that, you know, maybe they just hoped it was more like Star Trek and Star Wars and other franchises as well. But we'll get into that and what, you know, I've got to say from the outset, I've enjoyed both movies. You know, they're a bit the same, but they're also exciting. They're fun, and James Cameron is at least trying something different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll say this just before we dive deep into it. One of the things about Avatar is I truly believe in both films, you're not going in for original story. Let's be honest. There's a lot of basic science fiction fantasy tropes in Avatar, but James Cameron... James Cameron has changed with both films how movies can be made. And I truly believe that, especially the original Avatar, and we'll get a little more into that. But yeah, James Cameron, on a technical level, the Avatar films are historic, game changing as far as how films are.
They are amazing. And, you know, obviously from then on, Lucasfilm have kind of piggybacked on that with the volume and, of course, their technology they're using. Pretty much very similar, but using a stage that uses that environment as well to encapsulate real live action. Obviously, too, the mocap stuff's been done in, since then by other, you know, franchises as well. And it got revolutionized on this very set of films, which is, of course, what Jim Cameron was trying to put together. So to me, sometimes I think I'm watching a cartoon, though.
Well, so sometimes, yeah, sometimes no. You brought up the volume, and there's a point there I want to make about the volume, too, is because I think what has happened with the volume was that right place, right time, when we had all these restrictions from the pandemic and how you had to film, and you couldn't really go on location to film, so the volume became a big tool to use, and it came out at the right time for it. And I know there's some people who say, oh, they've already used the volume. Well, they've overused the volume because they didn't really have a choice. But now you see where they're starting to find the balance of when to use the volume and when to be practical. Like anything else, it's just like when George made the prequel films, when everybody was going bonkers over digital, and George went so much digital on the prequel films, and now we have a little bit more balance. And I think it's like anything else. Hollywood gets a new toy and they love to use it till they put it in the ground. Or in this case, they kind of weren't given a choice. It was the only real option they had under certain circumstances. But I think they're starting to find a balance with that now, just like I think with James Cameron. He's just so ahead of the curve on everything with the tech, especially on the technological end, that it's just he's here, everybody else is down here. And it's kind of scary.
James Cameron's always been the upstart. I mean, he's the one that came in between, you know, the bromance of Spielberg and Lucas, which obviously really kickstarted a lot of the great franchises, two of the big ones, obviously, Star Wars and, of course, Indiana Jones. But also, I think, you know, when he came along, you know, he looked outside the box. He didn't want to do exactly what they were doing. And I mean, they revolutionized their own, you know, franchises as well, and technology used to create those great franchises. But with James, I think he comes in more as a person that really worked on the floor. You know, he worked from the ground level as an art director and special effects committee on Piranha and many other features. One of them, of course, being Battle Beyond the Stars.
Yes. Now, I do have another question for you, Mr. Mullet, since you are down in Australia, and I'm curious because we've had some talks off the air, but on the air we haven't really talked about this. How are things with you with just the amount of media coming to you? Because obviously here in the US we have the writer's strike has ended, but the actors are still on strike, so things aren't in production yet, and we're starting to really feel it and notice it. There's a lot of films that have been pushed back. TV shows are just on stop right now. A lot of production are still on stop. Are you guys starting to feel that, even though you have like Australian production still going on, but are you starting to feel that pinch of, hey, there's the U.S. the big franchises that come out of the U.S. aren't coming out?
I don't think we are, to be honest, because we're still getting stuff that was produced before it. So, you know, if there was stuff that was done before the writer's strike, you know, and it just hasn't been released, yeah, we're starting to see some of that now. Perfect example of that, Scott Atkins, who continues to punch out, feels like 6 films a year, but really those films have been ones he's done over the last probably 4 to 5 years, right? So they're just backlogged. But I think we're going to feel a pinch soon when that all starts to run out, right? So, but as far as like local productions, I could tell you the one film that they have shut down due to the strike is Mortal Kombat 2, filming in the Gold Coast here.
Because of the US actors in it?
Correct. So the US actors have been pulled away, but what they are working still on is second unit.
What about Furiosa?
Furiosa has not been pushed back as such because it's still to release next year in 2024. Oh, the film is finished.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure where that stood when the strike happened. Mm-hmm. I did come across a recently released action film that feels like it should be something that's on the Mullet radar if it hasn't been already. It is a new film that has come out on Netflix, at least here in the United States. And of course, it stars the legendary Jackie Chan. And in this particular film, he is teaming up with one John Cena.
Oh, I've heard about this film.
The name of the film is Action Strike. And I'm going to tell you right now, I don't think I've seen Jackie Chan have this much fun with a co-star in a good while. John Cena, who is very underrated on the comedy front, in my opinion, but he's still got the action star stuff. He had some great chemistry with Jackie Chan, and especially see, of course, you always get the classic outtakes from the film in the credits. But it's not the best Jackie Chan movie by far. But they have a good chemistry, and the bad guy in it is the gentleman who played Theon Greyjoy's uncle in Game of Thrones.
Okay. Yep.
So I'm going to tell anybody right now, if you're looking for something to get your Jackie Chan fix on, get some of that kind of 80s action kind of feel to it, you need to check out his Action Strike.
He's got another one that's just come out too. I can't remember the name of it, but it was one about him being an actor as well in a basically a stuntman, and something happens and he's got to do some adventure, I guess. And they're tipping that this is his big comeback to comedy.
Interesting. Well, I want to ask you, what are your thoughts about John Cena, Adam? He's kind of become one of the more prominent action stars in Hollywood in the last 5 years or so. Obviously, he did some things while he's still doing some WWE, but he also was doing, he did like the Marine while he was still in WWE and a few other movies. What are your thoughts on John Cena?
Well, it's like John. I mean, I don't know too much about his wrestling career and stuff like that because I don't follow it. But as far as acting, he's done some really interesting stuff, and I actually like him. So one of the great ones, obviously The Marine, shot here on the Gold Coast and shot in the hinterland here as well, was a great start versus the T-1000. That was a fantastic little movie. A lot of Australian actors on that one as well. And now the next one he did that really sparked my interest was 12 Rounds.
Very underrated film. I really like 12 Rounds.
Yeah, it's sort of a riff on what they did in Die Hard 3 with that whole Simon Says sort of idea.
Yeah.
But I think done a little bit more interesting because he's got to really solve the problems as a firefighter.
Yeah. Also, Aidan Gillen from Game of Thrones, who played Littlefinger, is the villain in that one.
That's right. The one that tries to kill Bane.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great. He's always fantastic. He was also in Blitz, I think, too, with Jason Statham. But yeah, it's interesting because I think the thing is everyone just sees a meathead when they look at him, but the guy actually has a bit of class. He's got charisma. And when he does do the lines, because he looks so serious all the time, they work because they're funny.
Yeah. And if you're looking for something to see where more of his comedy side, when he really lets loose, I can name three films for you. One is called Blockers. The actual name of the film is Cock Blockers, but they never put the cock part in the title. It's a picture of a rooster. Yeah. So, and then he did two movies for Hulu called Vacation Friends. There's a one and the sequel just came out. And there, he is absolutely insane and off the wall hilarious in those as well. And of course, yeah, him doing the James Gunn Peacemaker show for HBO, which is just phenomenal.
Good little show. And, you know, I'm glad that he is still going to be Peacemaker in these new things popping up. But it'll be a new canon version, unfortunately, guys.
Oh, I think we might have a special guest popping in. I'm feeling a little Reitzel. I
think we're being raided by the Reitzel. Oh my goodness!
What's up, guys? Sorry, I'm late.
No, that's okay. We know you were doing something very important today.
I didn't want you to talk about Avatar without me.
Well, Kevin, you came in at a right time. We just kind of did some initial thoughts, but we were. The conversation I had was telling the mullet himself here, a mullet movie that he should be on his radar, which is that new Jackie Chan, John Cena film, Action Strike, on Netflix. And we were having a little conversation about John Cena because, you know, the mullet being the master of action films, what he thought of John Cena's action film career so far. So I'm curious, Kevin, you're just hopping in. I'd like to get your opinion on that.
You know what's funny is I think he's done more comedies than action that I can remember of recent, because I just finished start watching Vacation Friends 2. He did the Blockers movie. He's actually really, really funny. I know he's been in a bunch of action films, but he's making his start in comedy, which I think is great. And of course, you know, when you look at Peacemaker, yes, it's action, but it's hella funny. So I like him. I think he's good. He's you know, coming along as a good actor too. And, you know, I hope he keeps it up.
Well, I know he's got a new film that just, I think might have getting ready to hit streaming services, which is a movie called Freelance with him, Alison Brie, and Christian Slater.
Yes, please.
And Kevin might remember that he stayed in 2017 here on the Gold Coast. And may not have realized that some of the scenes of the Marine were shot at the bottom floor of where he stayed.
Oh, wow. Interesting. I did not know that was filmed in Australia. That's cool.
Let me ask you real quick. So we were talking about some of his earlier films when he was first breaking in, like the Marine and stuff. What are your feelings on the movie 12 Rounds that he did? Have you seen
that? I thought that was a decent action film. I thought it was, that was kind of really, I think the movie that, kind of brought him into the fold of really being an action hero. I liked the concept of it too. And I thought that, that was kind of his coming out party. Like, you know, hey, I'm the next new action star. You know, give me some roles. And, I remember enjoying that film when I saw it.
It's fantastic. Good. And you know, the best thing about that movie was the concept of the whole problem solving. You know, he's going to go around and solve these little puzzles. And it kind of has that Die Hard with a Vengeance feel, kind
yes. of. You know, and yes. Yeah, I love Die Hard with a Vengeance for that reason. I love that, you know, been put through the ringer and forced doing all these little menial tasks to keep him busy.
I mean, everyone gets stumped by the St. Ives joke, you know. But once was a man who traveled the St. Ives.
The one that stumps me is the water filling one. I still
yeah, that one gets me.
Yeah. So good. You know, and I tell you what, even though we're talking about earlier here was the thing that media is, you know, stopping in stores here in Australia. We've got JB continue to light the flame of physical media, LPs, Blu-rays, 4K, you name it.
Can I live there, please? Jeez.
Well, you bring that up because we were talking before the show started, Adam. The big announcement here in the U.S. that Best Buy, which is probably the closest thing to JB Hi-Fi, by the end of 2024 will not be selling physical media as far as movies and music.
And Target is also phasing out their media as well.
Yeah, sadly, it's happening here too with those. JB's the only one that's continuing to roll forward. Sanity has actually closed their doors as well, and they're the one that had deluxe media, like some great Laserdiscs still in service. All gone, sadly. So buy them while you can.
I am. I'm trying. I got Avatar Way of Water in 3D. Look at that.
You actually found it in 3D.
I didn't see that around. Yeah.
I knew I wasn't going to be able to find it on the shelves. So I ordered it through. I actually pre-ordered it through Amazon. As soon as it was available for pre-order, I ordered that thing in 3D. So
You got to grab them while you can, man. The other thing too, is we were noticing a lot of material still coming to Australia while a lot of US material obviously stopping due to the writer's strike, which is happening still to this day. And, you know, it's slowing down a lot of productions, but one thing that is happening is a lot of British materials still come to your shores, courtesy of Mr. Adkins.
Yeah. It's interesting, too. I tried to get the new Steelbook from Best Buy of Prey, and that thing is hard to come by. And on the secondary market, it's already over $100 right now. I got put on a wedding list on Best Buy online because it sold out online. But the Steelbook version is very hard to come by right now.
It's hard to find these things, I tell you. And when you do, you got to get them as cheap as you can. And if over $100, it's going to be a hard buy.
Well, yeah. It makes me wonder what it's going to be like when those Mandalorian seasons come out on physical media.
Oh, well, yeah.
I can't wait to get back to England because of the store, the SEX. It stands for Cash Exchange. It's like a pawn shop. And I was told that Australia used to have them.
I would still have them, CEX. Yeah.
Okay, everywhere. Cool. Yeah, because apparently they're a very good source for physical media. And the stores that I went into had some great selections.
I think that's where my brother and I were in a couple of weeks ago. And we walked inside. There's this old guy there. And we said, look, we're looking for old TV seasons. Do you have anything left? He goes, mate, I got a whole wall of them, yeah? And went over the side and had a look. And he had all seasons. I think it was seven seasons or whatever. No, four seasons. MacGyver. And, of course, Grant picked them all up for only $30, the whole pack, you know? Nice. And that's the great thing about this is it's usually in pretty good condition too. So why not? I mean, you can get MASH for about $200, the whole lot.
Jeez.
That's a lot of Hawkeye.
That'll put me to sleep.
Yeah. Oh, it's crazy. So who is your action pick right now, Kevin? If you could pick one actor that's out there, you know, it can be Mr. Wick if you want. Who is the be-all and end-all action star currently?
That, you know, that's a good right now. I would love to get another nobody with what's his name from Better Call Saul. You know, yes. But yeah, I mean, you know, I would like to see. I really enjoyed The Gray Man with what's his name?
Chris Evans?
No, he was a villain.
Ryan Gosling. Was it Gosling?
Yes, Ryan Gosling. I think Ryan Gosling needs to get more of that. He just did Barbie, which is great, made over $1 billion. But that movie's kind of underrated. That one's really, really good. But you know what? I would also like to see Charlize Theron get in doing some more. So I can't wait for The Old Guard 2. Charlize can really kick ass. Let's get her to do some more action films. She's kind of found that niche. I hope she keeps doing it. And then she'll turn around and do a comedy, and she's just as good as that.
She's great. Kyle, what about you?
I think it's kind of hard right now because I don't think there's any true straight up just action stars like we had back in the 80s, like a Stallone, like a Schwarzenegger, where, you know, they centered on the action. I think the actors now are a little bit more diversified. If I'm going to pick a guy who I want to see more in action, because I think right now he might have one of the better action franchises out there, especially after the last film, is Hemsworth. Extraction 2 is phenomenal.
Yeah, he's great.
Extraction 2 is phenomenal. Good call, Kyle.
I think it might even be better than the first. I really enjoyed
it. I would agree. Yeah. They're both good, but yeah, it's better than the first, yeah.
I'm going to go with somebody different, guys. You know, he's been a co-star for years and finally starting to get his own. He's not young, but he's got spark. He's got charisma. He's got fire. And he feels like an 80s guy. Frank Grillo.
Yeah. It's interesting. They've been trying to make Frank Grillo happen. You know, he's been in some of these kind of lower budget action drama films. I remember he was in my favorite Purge movie, the second one.
It felt like when that Purge movie came out, that was going to be the one.
Yeah. But he just quite hasn't hit that yet. And I hope he hasn't been, you know, pigeonholed into like that guy, action dude, or the supporting guy. But I completely agree with you, Adam. I love that guy. That guy's great.
He's kind of got a De Niro-like spark in an action movie guy's thing. Yeah, and I think that's a step above the guy that we all love, which is Adkins. He's great. Yeah. But Adkins is the physical guy. This guy's physical as well, but I think Grillo can actually act.
Yeah, he can.
That's one of the huge ones.
I think the other aspect of this, why we don't have these over-the-top action stars like we used to have, is because I think such an influence of the international films like The Raid and that style of action. You know, I look at the Max Show Warrior and the fight scenes with that. I think so much has changed too in the action genre and how it comes across and what we expect.
That lead actor of Warrior, I want to see more of him.
Andrew Koji.
Andrew Koji,
Storm Shadow in the Snake Eyes film.
Yeah, exactly. He was the best part about Snake Eyes. <laughs> You know, <laughs> he turned out to be the good guy and Snake Eyes being the bad guy. But yeah, I love him in Warrior, man. I could see a lot more of him, and I hope I do.
He was in Bullet Train.
Yeah, that was. That's right.
Yeah.
Which is not bad. It was an interesting, it felt like Lucky Number 11, that sort of movie as well, kind of, you know, told from all multiple angles. And I'm like, yeah, it's all right. But to see them in the with the other guys, Sonata, Brad Pitt, and vice versa, was really interesting. Which is interesting too, because we're hearing that a certain member of that cast that's also in Marvel movies may be tipped to be the new Bond, which is of course Quicksilver.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. Aaron Taylor Johnson is kind of my like under the radar pick of the guy who might be shaping up to take over the action. At least a chunk of the action movie role. He's got Kraven the Hunter coming out. I don't know if that's going to be a good movie, but he's got that coming out. He's been a lot of talk of him of James Bond, and you know he was Kick-Ass. He was great in Bullet Train.
He's great in that. Yeah.
He's definitely somebody who's kind of right there. If he makes the right move, he could really jump into that action star role.
Oh, it's just huge, isn't it? What's coming now, folks? Here we are today to talk about one of the big, huge movies from last year, which is still doing the rounds everywhere, streaming, and of course on multiple formats. Kevin even has two of them sitting right there with him. He's got the original and of course the brand new Way of Water physical edition 3D. Looks amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's really cool. I love Avatar in 3D. It's obviously still one of the best 3D movies ever. I wish they would release the extended version in 3D. It's not available in 3D. Yeah. But the extended version is great for some of the, especially the opening scene and some other scenes in there too. But I'm just glad that they still were issued in 3D. Because recently I got a 3D TV. It was totally worth rewatching these.
Amazing. I definitely want to get a physical copy myself. Even though a lot of the time now I'm streaming to my projector to watch it in the home cinema. So it's, for me, I'm usually streaming it, but I want that on my good TV as well. How about yourself, Kyle? Are you going to get the physical copy?
I will get the 3D copy of Way of the Water because I do have a 3D TV as well. And I try to pick up the better 3D films that have been made. And let's be honest with you, James Cameron revolutionized the modern 3D film with Avatar. And there's very few films that have lived up to that original Avatar 3D. I remember going to the theater and Avatar came out, I believe, in December of that year, and going to the theater because it was so dark. I went and it was light, but it was dark when it came out. But just that 3D experience was just absolutely mind blowing coming out of the Avatar IMAX.
I've always loved the Avatar films, because it really encourages the theater going experience. And I know Avatar got a lot of crap for, you know, not original story or whatever it is. And a lot of people jumped on it after episode 7 came out for Star Wars. But I've always been a defender of Avatar. And I think that there is a good story in there. Yes, there are similar stories that have been done in the past. But I like the different twist that it has on it. And Way of Water was really cool how you got to see the other Na'vi, the ocean Na'vi, and you also get to see the connection with the other animals from under the water. And I think that is a big part of both Avatars that a lot of people don't really realize about connecting with nature, connecting with other living animals other than just yourself. And I love that Avatar explores that and explores those different cultures within a culture. Whenever I watch it, I just love being taken away to that world and especially enjoying it in 3D.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big things that Cameron has done with both Avatar films. But I think especially with Way of the Water, because when you're doing digital, water is incredibly hard to work with. Okay. And because you're trying to deal with the rippling effects and everything like that. And, you know, Cameron especially has been a forerunner on dealing with water effects going back to the Abyss. But
yeah,
this Way of Water, there was times watching it in the theater where you forget you're watching a digital film. It's that well done. And I think, you know, Kevin brought it up. I mean, people get on the storyline of it and that's fine if that's what you want to do. But you are so missing out on just what the technological advances are of this and this just breathtaking pull you in, not realizing you're watching a digital film world with this. Yes, you have live action people in it, but still it's mostly digital. And you completely forget about it. And there's not too many films with those style of effects that really pull you, get away with that like Cameron has done with the two Avatar films.
I think it's interesting too that, you know, Cameron's telling a similar story to what George was in The Phantom Menace, not the main story, but a story about, as Kevin just pointed out, you know, getting into nature, but also being one with nature. So if you think about in Feed, we've got obviously, you know, the people living on the surface, but we've also got the Gungans, and both are trying to live within that planet in a symbiotic relationship. So I think, in some way, Avatar for me, when I watched it in 2009, was, yeah, there's the main story of what's happening with Jake Sully and Neytiri, and obviously, you know, these humans coming up for unobtainium and pretty much trashing the planet. That's one thing. And that's pretty much what the Trade Federation was about to do to Naboo. So it was interesting. I was watching that in the cinemas. I'm like, well, I need to watch this more because I need to find out what the world is. That's what absorbed me into Avatar, was this world building that is on another level, isn't it, Kevin?
Yeah, it is, definitely. It's and I think that's something that he'll be known for, because he's always been able to do that. He's always been able to do that with all of his films, and kind of show us a different side, and not just show us action, but show us heart as well. You know, show us character and emotion. And I always get that from a lot of his films. And I'm glad he's not one of those guys that pumps one out every year. You know, he takes his time and he does it with pride, you know. And I remember watching an interview with him, that, you know, so he can get Titanic done. He gave up his rights or his, I think his director's pay or something. He didn't make any money off that, you know. But it gave him enough cred to do pretty much anything that he wanted after that.
Let me ask you guys this, see what you think, because I feel like Cameron kind of made a change in what his point is when he's making a movie from The Abyss on, because I think for him, not only just making the movie, but the technical challenge of making a movie and doing these things that are cutting edge and beyond even the cutting edge, I think that's as much the challenge to him and the enjoyment of making these films that is just directing a film. And I think there's just as much emphasis for him on that as there is making a good film, compared to, I think, you go back like Aliens and Terminator, where he's still doing that, but not to the, he has a carte blanche by the time he gets to Abyss to be able to just go full experimental and not have to worry about that.
You know, I was I'm glad you brought that up, Kyle, because I was having a conversation with a friend of mine a couple months ago about Cameron, because we were talking about Avatar. And I was kind of reevaluating my favorite Cameron films, and Aliens will always be my favorite. I, you know, me and my wife share a passion for that film. But number two, actually, for several years now, it's probably not what you think. If you had to guess, what do you think my second favorite movie of Cameron's is?
True Lies.
You nailed it, buddy.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. True Lies.
True Lies, I'll be honest, True Lies is a masterpiece because it is a great action film. It is funny. I love that his wife is not like this person that like, oh, help me, help me. She like gets in on it, you know, the bad guy's entertaining. I love the plot and Tom Arnold's best film. It has my favorite line too. The bitch even took the ice cube trays.
Let's not forget an early debut for a young Elijah Dushku.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. That movie to me I would go on and say that's probably almost a perfect film. That movie is just so much fun. I love it. I mean, I'm still waiting for him to release like some anniversary Blu-ray 4K edition. I hope that comes out.
Yeah.
Never seen it on DVD. Yeah.
The Abyss. The Abyss needs that Blu-ray 4K.
Yeah. All of it.
I'll say 4K or something.
Yeah.
So then, okay, let me ask, what's your favorite Cameron film or second favorite Cameron film, Adam?
All right, my favorite one, straight out, is Terminator. Always has been.
That's my wife. Yeah.
Yeah, it sets his style, his look, and just his ideal of, you know, great storytelling. He's able to really push this. Now, my second film isn't exactly one he directed, but he wrote it. Now, a lot of people don't know he actually really wrote this film. It's Point Break.
Oh.
He literally took the groundwork of that and even just doing
that. Yeah, because Bigelow directed that, right? Yeah.
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 I think we might have had a little mullet freeze up here. He'll probably bounce back in a minute. But
Kyle? What are your two favorite Cameron films?
I'm like you. Aliens is always going to be number one for me. I think Aliens is about as close to a perfect of a movie as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
This is a soft spot. This movie's just got a soft spot for me. I remember watching a lot of stuff before this movie came out about the filming of it, and I just found it so fascinating. And that's The Abyss. You can throw out, especially on the regular version, if you take out that last 5 minutes of the film when the ship comes up and it looks like crap. But if you watch the extended cut of The Abyss, the director's cut.
I think the extended cut's the only way to go. Would you agree, Kyle?
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah. I think what I love about that movie is it kind of was capitalizing on a time too when there was a lot of like underwater science fiction horror films coming out. You had Leviathan around that same time, Deep Star 6, a few others. And this movie played on that fear of being down in that abyss, but in a different way, not to be horrifying, but just to be intense. And that's what I love about the movie. And obviously the effects underwater of the underwater creatures are good. And it's honestly one of my favorite Ed Harris performances as well.
And Kyle, what a cast. I mean, that cast you got Manfredonio, you've got Michael Biehn and probably one of his more interesting roles, you know, to play in a bad guy like that off his hinges. But then the crew of the ship of that submersible, fantastic. And they're what makes that film great.
Yeah.
Really does, you know. But I got to say, this new film that he's put together, Way of Water, is probably one of his most interesting. Yeah, the story is literally a continuation. We've got Jake and Atiri have started a family. It's, 15 years roughly hence, the last one. And, of course, the humans aren't quite done with Pandora. No, they're coming back. They're coming back badder. And they've even got somebody from, of course, The Sopranos to come in and go, you know what? We're going to take your planet and we're going to take even more. And, well, we won't spoil what they're taking if you haven't seen it. But I will say that it is an interesting continuation because I was expecting everything to be bigger and bolder, but it felt like I'd never left because we're seeing the same sort of imagery, same sort of power, but just on a grander scale. And if anything, the 3D was smoother.
I was just going to say, that's Cameron again taking advantage of the technology and improving upon it. The 3D is great. Everything with it is great. And the aspect of you're bringing back the familiar voices too, with Sigourney, with Zoe Saldana, Sam also. It's a great cast. I think it's actually a very underrated cast in this in these films. And it's not easy for them because, you know, they're doing all this mocap and everything like that. And what I think one of the things that Cameron did so well with Way of the Water was it was Pandora, but it was still something so new and so fascinating. And it pulls, again, it's pulling you in with the world he's created. And everything I'm hearing is he's going to a different part of Pandora for the next film. And I'm curious. That's what I'm more excited about than anything. What is he going to do next as he continues to build this world of Pandora?
Yeah, I love that he explored the water aspect of Pandora. And for me, I've always loved the water. I've always loved the beach. I live near the beach now. And it was funny too, because when I was watching it, a lot of those underwater scenes, I know how that smells. I know how that water smells. I know how that reef smells. I know what the underwater area feels like. And it just really, really takes you in. And also too, the music was really, really good too. I just want to give a shout out to that, but yeah, definitely.
I mean, we cast in this, obviously it's continuation. We bring back also even a bad guy in this, Stephen Lang, plus his crew, pretty much as they were from the others, but now in the Na'vi avatar bodies, if you like. That was interesting, you know, for somebody to die and then come back in the one thing they despise the most. Yet he took it on the chin and went, you know what, let's use this to our advantage. It's just another tool. What do you reckon, Cole?
I think Stephen Lang is probably the biggest beneficiary out of Avatar, because his career just took, I mean, he's been around, but he just took off, and his character was so memorable. And then what I think is a very interesting twist and very interesting way to bring this character back into this world is just phenomenal. Like you said, he takes it as I'm one of these avatars, but then he realizes he's basically become a living weapon in some aspects of it. And it's a great twist on that, because it goes back to that classic line. I am a trained Marine in one of these avatar bodies, and and how excited it got him. I mean, so yeah, I think that was a great play by Cameron in that, to take basically a line from that film and a concept of the original Avatar and then intensify it by 10,000 by putting this character in an avatar.
What do you reckon, Kevin? Was it a special way of bringing him back, isn't it?
Yeah, I've always been a fan of Stephen Lang too, and he pretty much stole all his scenes that he was in the first one. So I was glad he came back, and I thought it was ironic that he came back as a Na'vi, but you know, he comes back, you know, stronger than ever, you know. And I remember, you know, I loved him in Tombstone as Ike Clanton. But also too, he has another tie to water, and that is the original book, The Meg. He did the voice for the audiobook, and he was really good in that as well. And wow. The first movie I remember seeing him in was Band of the Hand, and he played, have you ever seen Band of the Hand? Yes, no?
Yeah. Yes, yeah, I have,
yeah. Yeah, he plays like the survivalist guy that teaches these inner city kids to work together and then fight against the local drug lord, of course. But I'm a fan overall of this cast too, because Cliff Curtis is in it there. He's like the other leader, the tribe leader. And I've always been a Tonawari, huge
fan. Yeah.
Yeah, I've always Tonawari, is that how you say it?
Tonawari? Yeah, Tonawari, yeah.
What's really funny though is I didn't even realize, and I don't know if it's just because of the acting or the special effects or both, I didn't realize Kate Winslet was in it.
Yeah.
Until the end of it, you know? Yeah. So I thought that was funny. It was great to see Edie Falco in there as well. The cast overall is great, but Stephen Lang, he's my favorite.
Cliff's an interesting guy. Cliff, obviously has been on New Zealand television and film for years. He played Uncle Bully in Once Were Warriors. So pretty dark roles in the past, but also really interesting ones. Like we've talked about before, Collateral Damage, he was the main bad guy in that. But the tie to here in Australia is even closer, because I used to work with his niece.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
So Uncle Cliff was around and about. Very nice guy.
It's funny about him too, because he finds a way to get himself in some pretty big franchises, and you don't quite realize it. He was actually the lead for 3 seasons on Fear the Walking Dead, the original Walking Dead spinoff.
In the Fast and Furious film too, yeah. Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah, so I mean, he gets around it. It's funny because in some ways he's one of those, oh, that guy, and yet he's Cliff Curtis too.
And
that look. He's just that face you always remember.
And he's worked with Zoe Saldana too in the movie Columbiana. He was in that film as well.
Oh, 100%. Now, at the end of the film, we also have Mick Scoresby, who turns up with a boat, mainly for, of course, the bad guys to go hunting some big fish we know about. And that's played by Brendan Cowell, who's a very well-known Australian theatre and movie actor. He did Hill 9, which is a pretty big World War One pick about the trenches and how to take out, obviously, the Germans at the time. Huge film. And he's been on TV quite a while. We had Matt Gerald come back. Giovanni Ribisi's in a flashback. We also got Wes Studi. And for those that know some of the great work outside of, in and outside of, I should say, New Zealand, Jermaine Clement is also in the film playing Dr. Ian Garvin. Now, you might remember him from Men in Black 3, I should say.
Yeah.
You know, which he had the best teeth in the business in that one.
Also, you would be remiss returning to this film to the woman, the myth, and the legend that is CCH Pounder.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And also Sigourney Weaver.
She's pretty big.
Yeah. Well, you bring up Sigourney, though. Let's talk about that for a minute, because that's one of the more interesting. And if people had criticisms of Way of the Water, it was with her character. Yeah. I felt like a lot of people felt like that was the character that felt like, oh, real classic trope, here we go again. But James wanted Sigourney in. He found a way to get Sigourney in.
You know what's interesting about that too is that Linda Hamilton is somewhere in the cast. She's showing up on IMDb and also showing up in also next to Eddie Falco and also David Thewlis.
Interesting.
Interesting. I forgot Thewlis was in it, but he is in it. I remember seeing his face somewhere there in the movie. So, you know, what a cast. And obviously they're going to be expanded on into the next ones. But I think even the opening was great to sort of cover the years in between the films and give us a little bit of the background of what was going to happen. But also then we start to see the family, you know, Jake being the reluctant dad. I mean, he's, you know, he's trying his best and he's going through those growing pains of kids being teenagers.
You brought up a good point, though, Adam. I think it was important because there was such a big, long gap in between, you know, the first one and the second one. It was nice that they made it that long gap so his kids can be born and grown up a little bit. And that was, I think that was a very good way to do the time jump. It pretty much wasn't a time jump. It was natural time to play. Natural time.
It's great. What about you, Cole? Did you like the start of the movie?
I think it was the way to go, too, because It's funny because one of the big things that people were kind of a little bit skeptical about this movie was the fact that we had not seen an Avatar film in so long. And it's like, why is it after so many years? And people went in very skeptical about Way of the Water with this time jump. And I think having that, starting the movie out with, like Kevin said, basically almost real time in between. And I think it's funny, but I almost feel like people went into this movie doubting James Cameron because of the time frame between these two films.
It was interesting. He did try and write a sequel before this and set it out in that time where there was going to be even a Na'vi battle in space outside in the atmosphere of Pandora. So, you know, they were trying battles with that and, you know, really see how they can push it so far. And maybe it just didn't work as well. But at the end of the day, I think what they've done now seems to have worked because this movie is a natural progression. I think it worked well. And I mean, it is a lot of years later, but it needed to be able to tell the story they're doing and even repeat things like Lang's character now, you know, learning to be a Na'vi, you know, learning to fly the birds and everything. What do you reckon, Kevin?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And, you know, obviously I was looking up the budget for this. The budget was $350 million estimated. And whether you hate it or you love this film, or on the fence about it, it doesn't matter because Fox is behind him because he made over $2 million for this film. excuse me. $2
billion. $1 billion.
$2 billion.
It's not $2
billion. $2 billion.
Billion. Yes. Kevin brings up an interesting point, though, because you said Fox, Kevin, but it's actually Disney. And that's
one. Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Disney now. Yeah,
that's one of the biggest interesting points about Avatar is what happened as far as the rights of Avatar between the first film and the second film, because Disney acquired Avatar first strictly as rights to put the Avatar park in Animal Kingdom. And I've been there. It is phenomenal. The main Avatar ride is, in my opinion, the best ride at Disney World right now, and it's not really that close. Wow. And what the World of Pandora that they built in Animal Kingdom is phenomenal, and it's beautiful, and I would say it's up there with anything with the park. But then, obviously, then the whole sale of Fox to Disney, Disney then has the movie rights to Avatar all of a sudden, and things start happening fast. And, you know, okay, get the sequel. Now we're hearing, oh, 5 movies for Cameron, or is it going to be 3, or is it going to be whatever? What I find most interesting is, too, and I think this is one of the things that I think people maybe are a little bit frustrated with Avatar with, is it's become another part of the Disney machine. And also, I think there's the aspect of, and I'm curious what you guys think on this, that people feel like we're losing James Cameron doing other things because he's so focused on all these Avatar films, which to me is because it's his life project. This is the series. This is his stamp on his life and his career is this film series. This is the story he's always wanted to tell, and he's going to tell it. And now he has basically, after Way of Water success, he has carte blanche to tell it how he wants to tell
it. Did he have his hands in Alita Battle Angel, or is that someone else?
He is a producer on that with Robert Rodriguez. Okay. And the rumors are that they have that a sequel is about to be announced, because Cameron and Rodriguez have been so going at bat for that film. And I'm a big fan of that. That's one of my favorite
3D movies, too. Yeah.
So yeah, it is, yeah. But what's interesting too with Cameron, you know, like he said, look, he'll do the third film, but after that, he said in a number of interviews, he's written them, they're ready to go. He's willing to see other people adapt it into the fourth and fifth films. And there's also meant to be a prequel novel that he was going to write that may end up just being a film instead. And he's interested in directing that one. So we've got at least another 20 years of Avatar, I would say.
Well, it's interesting from what I've seen of rumors and everything like that, the third one is basically pretty much confirmed that it will be that the Avatar films are kind of dealing with a little bit with elements too. So the next film is going to be some kind of fire tribe or on Pandora. But the interesting rumor is that the fourth and fifth, if there is a fourth and fifth film, that at some one of the films will be the Na'vi coming to Earth, because Earth has lost their AWA per se. And they come to Earth to try. Jake Sully brings his family to Earth to help try and restore Earth with its own AWA. So again, those are just rumors, but I find that I think it's a very interesting concept.
Bring nature back, yeah. Bring old Gaia, as some of the native tribes call it. You know, the God is Earth. Earth is God sort of principle, you know, give back to it, give back to nature. And I think that's a very important point that Cameron's trying to do in this, and I think he's done it in other projects, is, you know, to simplify things. The Abyss kind of did that too, the aliens coming down and saying, you don't need all this tech, you don't need all that. Like, even brought, you know, the character that Ed Harris played up to the surface without any need of technical gear and stuff like that too. So these are interesting ideas that he's always proposed. And I think, you know, keeping life simple, keeping within what God gave you.
Yeah, I agree. It's also interesting to see too going forward, because we know it's not going to be anywhere near the gap between Avatar films, how Avatar becomes more of a franchise.
As opposed to now, or what do you mean?
Well, it's
already a franchise.
Well, it's a franchise, but you had that huge gap between 1 and 2. And we're not used to that these days. We're used to having the next MCU thing out, the next Star Wars thing out. Bang, 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 bang. And Cameron's not going to be rushed, but he also knows that his time is finite too. And so I think the Avatar, I think 26 was the rumored date for Avatar 3. Now, a lot of that, who knows at this point, but he was filming 2, and I think he was filming part of 3 while he was filming 2 as well. So and it's a matter then too, if he wants to do 4 or 5, because I know that Disney was hesitant to greenlight any more than a third film until they saw how Way of the Water did.
I think they will now.
I think they already have. I think that's just a backdoor thing saying, we're doing that.
he'll no doubt say Disney will come out. You've got a streaming series idea. Yeah, Avatar, the Way of the Streaming, you know, will happen one day soon. Who knows? I think it's all there. I think the big thing is the end battle in this on the water was two or three things put together. There was a touch of Titanic in there with the ship going down, even the way the Abyss was a little bit. But also we've got these little scarab-looking vehicles going around that look like crabs. And, you know, he's taking those elements that we all love and are part of marine life and adding to them and sort of mechanizing them as well. So I'm interested to see what they do add to that.
If there's one thing that I think Cameron should do, and if there's anyone that could do it, he could. I would love for an option to, when you stream a movie that was also made for 3D, that if you click into Disney Plus and you hit Avatar, Avatar 2, Way of the Water, there should be an option for 3D version. And all you got to do is put the glasses on. That would be freaking cool.
Let me, Kevin, I want to, especially you on this. One of the things too with Way of the Water compared to the first Avatar film, because you're dealing with underwater creatures, the creatures in this felt real. Compared to the first one, because in the first one you had all these bright colors of the creatures, they were just alien looking enough. But the underwater creatures here, because I think there's also in our own minds, there's so much we don't know about creatures that live under the water and things like that. They just felt like, and how they came across on the screen with the technology. This is like, I should be able to see these things in the ocean.
That was my favorite part of the film, was the underwater scenes with these creatures and the young Sully kid bonding with one of them as well. They felt real to me. And even the sounds they were making, because I've seen and heard a lot of underwater animal sounds, whether it's whale, whether it's, you know, dolphins, whatever it be, they nailed that too. That was a really nice touch. If you pay attention and you watch the film, the sounds that they're making and just the ripple of water, the water itself, the way that he's able to make that look real underneath to a certain degree. And the creatures were just amazing. And it was a wonderful, because when you saw the first film, they had some great land bound creatures and they were fantastic. It definitely brought you into the world of Pandora, but seeing it on the water side of it and underneath the water, it just lets you know how massive of life that there is on Pandora. And it was really, really one of the highlights of the movie for me.
It's huge.
I think one of the things too, and the difference between being on land and in water, is when you're on land, you can make it feel more alien. You can make it feel more like another world. With water, that's kind of another world for us too. And so no matter what, I think there's a non-alien feel of water in the aspect of it's a universal thing. And I think with that, that's one of the other reasons why that works so well.
Yeah, I think so too. I think the other thing is we relate it to what we, you know, see in our own world. If we can, we get the message across from what Cameron is doing too. So before we wrap, guys, I want to get your favorite scene in the movie and the scene that for you warrants the sequel, you know, that something that was visually entertaining, but also, you know, was sparkled, you know, your imagination for more. We'll start with you, Kevin. What was the one that really set it off for you?
The end battle scene was really, really good because there was a lot going on there. But I love the introduction to those whales and the connection that, and I can't remember the Sully son that was making the connection to the whales. When you first go down there, where like the other native kids are kind of being jerks, you know, treating them as outsiders, you know, and kind of setting them up for failure or whatever. That was right there. That was some of my favorite scenes right there. Cause you're seeing this for the first time, you're experiencing it like that kid was for the first time.
Excellent.
Real quick, when he helped the one whale, because he had that piece of thing on him, what was it, like
the hunting thing, yeah.
Spear. Yeah, that was cool. That's when you knew that they were bonding with that creature.
It's beautiful. Yeah, I gotta agree. Carl, what about you?
Honestly, I've got to agree with Kevin. That was probably as far as just how real it felt. That was good. The end battle scenes were incredible. The mechs that they used, designs that they used were really well done. But yeah, just when they first get to that village and their sanctuary, and you see them going through the learning process of how to survive with the water tribes, I think all of that was just so beautiful and so impressive. And that pulls me in, and that makes me want some more. But there's also curiosity, because I think they left with some very interesting dangling plot threads for the sequel. I think everything to do with Stephen Lang's character and the fact that his son is now, I know a lot of people don't care for the spider character, but they've got an interesting plot line there. You've got an interesting plot line with how his spider sees Zoe Saldana's character, and Jake, who is still, I think it's one of the kind of the ongoing plot threads that they, even though they may not have put the focus on it as much in this one as they did in the first one, him still trying his human sensibilities, but also becoming part of Pandora itself. And you even see them kind of address that a little bit with how the kids are raised here. And I think they did a very phenomenal job with that. And I'm curious to see how that's going to continue on, especially when come back and his children are even older, and what the world of Pandora is looking like now after the events of Way of the Water, because it seems like this is going to come to a head in the third film in a big way.
I think you're right. I think the biggest thing is they're setting up the Sully children to really take forefront in these new sequels, you know, that all happen. I think you'll find that, you know, Jake will be not a secondary character, but won't be the main focus. You know, he's our window into the world, but the real thing are the Sully children, because they are going to really be part of this elemental journey, particularly Sigourney Weaver's character, I think is really interesting. So it's time for our review of this, folks. That is, of course, out of 5, the Hallenbeck scale. That's right. The 5 that, of course, Bruce Willis's character, Joe Hallenbeck, did in what film, boys? Can we remember?
The Last Boy Scout.
Yep. That's the one. That's right. Except he was talking about
one of my favorite Bruce Willis roles, by the way. One of my favorite Bruce Willis characters, too.
It was great. Now, of course, I'm going to give it a solid 5. There you go. 5 out of 5. Why? Because it gives everything. It's 5 good reasons. 1, Cameron's back and doing what he does best. Big, epic action sequences and storytelling. 2, the cast, fantastic. They deliver on every performance. 3, Stephen Lang coming back and actually delivering something different, but really stealing again the scenes of these films. Where are we up to? 4, the actual world building again, building up further, learning more and more about this universe, plus more about what Earth's after. And 5, for the ending, the battle scene is fantastic. Kev, how do you give it out of 5?
I'm hiding it behind my Blu-ray 3D DVD Blu-ray here. It's a 5 for me. I actually liked it better than the first one, to be honest with you. Oh, wow. I liked how just overall how the story was done. And I liked that there was a lot more kind of meat on the bone, so to speak. You know, I think that the new characters that were also included as well were just as captivating. And visually, it's just phenomenal.
All right, Kyle, what about you?
When I came out of the first Avatar film, I felt like the world had changed. As like, movies will never be the same after this. I had seen something historic and powerful, and like, just we're on a totally different trajectory for how movies can be made now. I came into this one, I'll be honest, there was some uncertainty there, not so much in James Cameron, but just like, it's been so long, and now we're coming back to this world. And I went into it, and I came out of it like Kevin. In Avatar Way of the Water, I enjoyed more than Avatar. And Avatar is a film I thoroughly enjoy. This one hit in so many ways. I think it's even more powerful emotionally.
Yeah.
Cameron, I knew the technology was going to be wonderful. And I think he even surpassed what my expectations were going to be for the technology, which when we're really talking about 3D technology and digital technology, you wonder how much farther can we really truly go. And you look what James Cameron did, and it's just outstanding. The storylines that are there, what the message he's trying to send in this. This movie's a 5 out of 5 without any question. And I think if anybody has had any doubts about James Cameron because of the time delay of this film and what he was doing, I think there is no longer any way you can ever doubt what James Cameron does.
Definitely worth the wait.
Yep.
Oh, that's it, 100%. So brings our episode here and review, of course, of Avatar The Way of the Water to a close here at Lethal Mullet. But I want to thank these two gentlemen, not only for appearing on the show today, but also for being some of the best pals you could ever want in fandom, you know. Not only being on the same platform and creating this great fandom podcast network, but being genuinely amazing and good pals. I want to thank
appreciate you, brother.
Appreciate it, man. We love you.
So you can catch us all on, of course, the fpn.podbean.com. And a bit of a mouthful, but that's where you can catch us. You can also catch me on social media at The Lethal Mullet. Kevin, where can we catch you?
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, or Twitter's now X. And what's the other one, Kyle?
Threads.
Threads. You can find me at Spartan_Phoenix. And, of course, you can find me on the Fandom Podcast Network and Facebook.
And Cole, where can we find you?
You can find me on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it this week, AKyleW. You can find me on Instagram and Threads at AKyleFandom. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me, of course, all over the Fandom Podcast Network. And be sure also to check out the Fandom Podcast Network YouTube channel. Give that a like, give that a subscribe. We're going to see if we can get the mullet on the YouTube channel a little more. We're going to work on that for a 2024 project. You might even see this episode up there. I'm going to work a little magic on that.
Well, we'll certainly do that, and it'll give you a lot more when it comes to, of course, mulletry, madness, action, and more. So from us all here, of course, Quinlan's Cantina, or, of course, Fandom Podcast Abroad, we wish you an amazing night, and we will catch you next time, same place on Tuesday night.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has many a thing to say about deep thought. And Deep Thought itself has many a thing to say about the guide, who are going to give you a guide through the maelstrom and enormity of the guide itself. Hosted by two unexpected travelers, the Lethal Mullet, all the way from Quinlan's Cantina in the Milky Way, and of course, Dan the Man from Birmingham. All on the other side of the water, they have hitched a ride and come to Ursa Minor. Tell you all about the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which you can find whenever you find good podcasts.
That's right, folks. Check out the brand new show, Deep Thought Life, Douglas Adams and Everything, monthly on, of course, the Lethal Mullet Network at lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on the socials at The Lethal Mullet. You can also check it out on YouTube very soon on the Spacebook Network, hosted by the one and the only co-host here, Dan the Man from Birmingham, Dan Hadley. All here. And don't panic, we'll be back.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU Podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville Show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.